Good morning, welcome to our podcast. My name is David Pritchard, and I'm the head of marketing here at Sentence. I'm joined again today by my colleague Catherine Hope, who is an associate in the employment team here at Sentence. Our podcast today, which will last approximately 10 minutes, is episode 78 of our monthly employment e-bulletin. So without any further ado, head over to Catherine. Catherine, good morning, and over to you.
Thanks, good morning, David. Right, so today we have four things to report on. A couple of cases and a couple of other bits to note. Firstly, there's the temporary right to work checks have been extended to the 5th of April, 2022. So the temporary COVID-19 adjusted right to work measures, they were introduced on the 20th of March last year in light of the pandemic. And it's now been confirmed that they will continue until the 5th of April, 2022, rather than the original end date, which was the end of August this year. Now, these measures allow the right to work checks to be carried out over video calls, and they allow for job applicants and existing workers to send scanned documents or a photo of their documents to employers via email or a mobile app, rather than sending the originals, as is usually the case. In following these adjusted measures, you as employers will maintain a statutory defence against a civil penalty. Retrospective checks will not be required where the adjusted checks have been carried out during this time period. Important to note that from the 6th of April 2022, normal service is set to resume, meaning that from that point you will have to check an applicant's original documents as you have previously done so, and check an applicant's right to work online if they've provided a share code. Just one thing to note, it is important to remember the Home Office is still intending to introduce a new digital right to work check solution and to include many who are currently unable to use the Home Office online checking service, including UK and Irish citizens. And this is set to enable checks to continue to be carried out remotely, but with greater security. Moving on to our first case in this bulletin. In the case of Aberfield Maidenhead Society versus Hart, the EAT has found that an email did not fall within an inequity exception to litigation privilege, even though it contained an indication that the employer intended to dismiss an employee, and this was sent prior to a disciplinary hearing. Now, just in terms of background, there are two types of privilege. There's legal advice privilege. This is confidential information communications between lawyers and their clients, and that's made for the purpose of seeking or giving legal advice. There's then litigation privilege, and that's confidential communications between the lawyers and their clients, or the lawyer or client and a third party. And that's when it comes into existence for the dominant purpose of being in connection with actual or pending litigation. Now, the protection provided by legal professional privilege will be lost where a communication or documents comes into being for the purposes of furthering a criminal or fraudulent design. And that's referred to as a fraud exemption or an inequity principle. Now, in this case, Mr. Hart had worked for Aberfield Maidenhead Society, I'll just refer to them as AMS, between 2011 and 2017, but he was then dismissed without notice for gross misconduct. He brought claims for unfair dismissal and wrongful dismissal, as well as various discrimination claims. Now, AMS disclosed all materials relating to the alleged misconduct, but claimed that various communications with their HR consultants regarding advice on how to deal with the disciplinary and potential dismissal were inadmissible by reason of litigation privilege. Now, the tribunal held that the communication, except for one email, was inadmissible due to litigation privilege, but it did find that one breached the inequity principle, and it was therefore disclosable. And this was an email from a senior officer of AMS, who was also, incidentally, the appeal officer. And in this, he'd stated that Mr. Hart's rudeness and gross insubordination had caused major problems to both Donna and Shirley, and this cannot be allowed to continue any longer. He will not, therefore, be returning to Nicholas House under any circumstances. So this was his view given at that point ahead of the disciplinary hearing. The tribunal held that it would be iniquitous to allow AMS to continue to defend the unfair dismissal claim as a fair dismissal, at least from a fair appeal perspective, when this view had been expressed 2 months before the dismissal. Now, AMS appealed this decision and Mr. Hart cross-appealed in relation to other documentation. And the EAT allowed the appeal. It held that an email in question was not such as to engage the inequity principle. AMS was not seeking advice on how to act unlawfully, and the HR consultant did not give that advice. The EAT did acknowledge that there may be cases where a client's instructions leave an advisor professionally embarrassed. An advisor might have to decide whether it's ethical to continue to act for the client. And this situation could arise, for example, if a client told its advisor that it intended to embark on a sham process But that wasn't the case here. Now, this case, in terms of points to note, it confirms that the circumstances where the iniquity principle will apply will be rare. So it's important to note that. So as long as advice is not sought on how to act unlawfully, documentation should attract that litigation privilege protection. However, as stated by the EAT, although the email was inadmissible in this case, the senior officer involved could still be cross-examined on his intentions and conduct of the appeal. So in that situation, if that applied to you, you would still be relying on him appearing as a convincing witness for the employment tribunal. Moving on to the next point, changes may be made to the Equality Act to better protect against menopause discrimination. The chair of the Women Inequalities Committee, Caroline Noakes, who's currently carrying out an inquiry into menopause discrimination in the workplace, has said that changes to equality laws to provide better protection for menopausal women should not be ruled out. She said that one of the key messages coming through as part of the inquiry is that menopausal women do not feel that they have adequate legal protection due to lack of clarity in the legislation. This here being the Equality Act, leading many to bring claims for disability discrimination because they're relying on that protected characteristic as a way in. So if she noted that if the current legislation isn't working, then the committee may take steps to change the Equality Act 2010 to recognise menopause as a protected characteristic. So this is certainly an area to watch. We'll be keeping an eye on that and we'll report if anything further comes up. So finally, this is another case. That of Kinlay versus Bronte Film and Television Limited. This is an employment tribunal case. Now, in this case, the employment tribunal considered a general occupation requirement that an actor be not visibly pregnant in defence to her claim of pregnancy and maternity discrimination. Miss Kinlay had previously played the part of Sarah Shadlock in the Strike series Career of Evil, and she was due to reprise that role in the following series. She ended up not being cast by the producer Bronte Film and Television Limited after they found out that she was pregnant. So she ended up bringing a pregnancy and maternity discrimination claim, and she argued that Bronte had treated her unfavourably because of her pregnancy. Now, in terms of background from the legislation perspective, the Equality Act 2010, this permits employers to discriminate lawfully in limited circumstances, and this includes a number of occupational requirement exceptions, which apply to claims concerning recruitment, access to promotion, transfer or training, and dismissal, where a requirement can be shown to be a proportionate means of achieving a legitimate aim. So in this case, Bronte admitted that the decision not to cast Miss Kinlay was due to a pregnancy, but they claimed here that there was a general occupation requirement and it was important that the actor performing the Sarah Shadlock role was not visibly pregnant. Now, although Miss Kinlay agreed that the character could not be visibly pregnant, she disagreed that there was a genuine occupation requirement because she felt there were a number of ways in which pregnancy could be concealed when filming. The Employment Tribunal in this case upheld her claim. It concluded that it would have been possible to conceal her pregnancy without this constraining the director's creative vision. In addition, the potential risk of her being ill was found to be minimal due to timings of filming and her corresponding stages of pregnancy. Also, in terms of post-production visual editing, this wasn't considered at the time, but even if it had been, the cost would not have been disproportionate. These were the responses to some of the arguments raised by Bronte. So in this case, the tribunal found that there was no genuine occupational requirement as it would have been possible to conceal Miss Kinlay's pregnancy. However, just an important point to note is that it remains unclear whether an occupational requirement not to appear visibly pregnant would actually be protected under the Equality Act. There may be instances, for example, where an employer would want to argue that having a protected characteristic of pregnancy is a requirement. For example, if you had a requirement for modelling of pregnancy clothes or other products. But interestingly, the drafting of the Equality Act does not currently appear to create a genuine occupation requirement not to have a protected characteristic. So it's just, if that came up again, that may well be something that needs to be looked at. So that's all for today. I'll pass you back to David. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Catherine. Appreciate that. Very quickly for me, we release webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sentence.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. You can also follow the employment team on Twitter at SentenceHR. As I usually say at this point, if you'd like to discuss anything Catherine's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her. Catherine can be contacted via telephone, her 191 226 7878, or via email, catherine.hope@sentence.co.uk. Thanks very much for listening. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you next time.